Now, as you know, many people who do monologues and jokes and so on, they have somebody out here with a little tripod and the idiot boards, you know, on which the jokes and the script is written. Well, I, you know, Bishop Sheen had an angel. I can't afford that. And I have nobody for an idiot board. I'd have to squint to see it. So what I've done, I've made my own. And I'm going to check these things off as I tell them. But what I would like to open up with is a story that originally was at the very front end of the old Chalk Talk. Well, it's a government film, and for their own reasons, they cut it out. But I think it is a gem. I opened up by saying that we human beings have an absolute genius for making mistakes. We're good at it. And 99% of the mistakes we make are caused by ignorance rather than knowledge. It isn't what we know, it's what we don't know that causes the error in judgment. Now, some mistakes are, they're just funny. One time, a nun was going to confession, and she tripped and stumbled and fell going into the confessional. What was unknown? The priest was ignorant of the fact that it was a nun. He heard somebody fall. And so he was concerned. He said, "What's wrong out there?" He said, "Oh, excuse me, Father, I'm so nervous." He said, "Why?" She said, "My children, they taught the second grade. They were killing her." He said, "How many children do you have?" She said, 52. And he said, "Get the hell out of here. I thought you were drunk when you fell in." No harm. No harm done. Now, some mistakes are very painful, and I believe that these are the kind that we can learn from if we're willing. And this is the way the Chalk Talk opened, with this story about an old, old Oriental patriarch who became quite irate one afternoon over the fact somebody had tossed his outhouse over the hill. Now, he had two sons. One was 8, one was 9. Typical mischievous kids. Called them in. He said to them, he said, "You know who threw a papa son our house over hill?" They didn't know. So he sat them down. He said, "Would like to tell you a story of American a boy named George Washington who one day chopping down a Papa San Washington cherry tree. Papa San Washington call him in, ask him if he know about cherry tree, and George say, 'Papa San, no can tell rye. It was I who chopping down your cherry tree.' Papa San Washington pat him on head, give him cookie." The 9-year-old, big grin, jumps up and makes the grand announcement. He says, "Papa San, it was I who threw your our house over hill." The old man nearly killed him. When the kid came to, he asked his father the obvious. He said, "Papa San, for why you tell story of virtue get reward? George Washington tell truth get cookie. I tell truth get whipping." The old man told him why. He said, "There only one difference. When George Washington chop it down on Papa San Washington cherry tree, Papa San Washington not in cherry tree." Big difference. No. Now, this is what appearance can do. This is a British story. There were two fellas born right next door to each other. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And they were great rivals from form school on up through their secondary education, through college, through university, and everything else. One went to Oxford. One went to Cambridge. One year, one would be a quarter of a point above the other. And that's the way they went. Now, right after they got out of university, one joined the British Navy, one entered the Anglican Church. And, of course, with their gigantic abilities, each in time, as the years went by, rose to the top. So that one of them became the Lord High Admiral of the British Navy, and the other became Archbishop of Canterbury. In the meantime, the military man remained militarily slim, like a pencil, and he was so decorated, you could hardly see the blue of his uniform for the gold of the medals. The archbishop, however, had grown not only in grace and wisdom and age, but also in girth before God and man. He had this huge front on him, like this. Now, as years went by, they didn't see each other from the time they got out of school until they met 30 years later, in a train station in London. All right? In the meantime, every Christmas, each would send the other a Christmas card signed with the latest advancement after the name, you know, underlined. They were still rivals. Well, it so happened that the archbishop in the station spotted the admiral first. And he went up to him and he tapped him on the shoulder. And when the fellow turned around, he recognized his old buddy immediately. But before he could say anything, the archbishop said, "Porter, would you put my bag on that train over there?" And the admiral recovered enough to look at this man in the flowing red cassock with this huge front. And he said, "Madam, in your condition, you shouldn't be traveling at all." There was this British fellow, you know, the British are great for dog racing, the greyhounds and so on. And this one fellow told a friend of his, he said, "I have the fastest dog in the entire world." He said, "He is so fast, I can hardly clock him. Now," he said, "I haven't entered him in any race so that not a soul knows about him but me and now you. But because you're my best buddy," he says, "sell everything you own, hock everything you can hock, borrow every dime you can borrow, even steal if you have to, and put it all on this dog." He said, "I've entered him in the most prestigious, wealthiest race in England." He said, "He has only one slight defect. He is so fast that as he rounds turns, he just kind of veers to the left. His speed makes him veer to the left. No problem." They both bet everything they could. When that dog bolted out of the gate, he shot around and lapped the field in such speed that there was an audible gasp from all of the people, you know, there. And he just, and wider and wider and wider. He's on the last lap of the race. And he veered so wide, he banged into the fence, knocked himself unconscious, didn't even finish. The two of them are stone broke. And his buddy comes up to him and he says, "You know, I don't know what to say." He said, "I've made you lose everything." And the fellow looked at him and he said, "No sweat, really." He said, "I've made it and I've lost it many times." He said, "I'll make it again. Don't worry." But he said, "You know, I've been thinking since the end of that race. I think I know how to get that dog from veering to the left." He said, "How? Tell me." He said, "Just put some lead in his right ear." "How do I do that?" He said, "With the biggest shotgun you can get." It was a little tiny hamlet out in Ireland, and they were having a typical Irish wake. Now, there were no funeral parlors. The body was laid out in the home. And in this case, they had him stretched across the kitchen table with a sheet over him and so on. And a couple of people were keeping the vigil out there when two legs of the table began to give way, and they caught it. And he said, I think I know how to fix this. He said, "We'll remove the table and we'll stick a chair under his neck and a chair under his ankle, and then we'll put a chair under his waist." He said, "Now wait here." And he went in the living room where they were all sitting around drinking. He said, "By the way," he said, "can you let me have three chairs for the corpse?" They said, "Hip, hip, hooray!" Hooray! That same fellow, his grandmother was on the street. She said to a fellow from Kerry, she says, "Can you see me across the street?" He said, "Wait, I'll cross and let you know." Postman over in Ireland was delivering letters, and he came to the yard of this woman, sat his huge dog there beside her. And he says, "Does your dog bite?" She said, "No, not at all." So he opens the gate and walks in the yard, and the dog almost chewed his leg off. He said, "I thought you said your dog doesn't bite." She said, "Mine doesn't. That ain't my dog." This Irishman went up to his parish priest. He says, "Father, all my life," he said, "I've had this lovely dog." He says, "He died at the age of 18. And he said, I know it may sound strange, but I want him to have a Christian burial." And the priest says, "You got to be joking, Murphy." He says, "We can't have a Christian burial for a dog." "Well," he says, "do you think the Presbyterian minister down the road will?" "Well," he says, "he might." And he says, "Do you think O'Rourke, the undertaker, would handle things?" "Oh," he says, I'm sure." Now he says, "Father, do you think $60,000 would be enough of an offering?" "Oh, for God's sake, bring him down to the church." He said, "I didn't know he was a Catholic dog." So. I'm told that the Irish, when asked any kind of a question, will give you an answer. Ask for directions and they'll give, they may not know where the place is that you're asking, but they'll give you directions. And this fellow was in Dublin, and he walked up to this fellow and he said, could you direct me to Doolin's Hotel? He said, well, of course. Go down to the end of the street and make a right. And he said, when you come to the stoplight, he says, make another right. And he said, when you get down to the following street, make a right. He said, that'll wind me up right here. He said, of course it will. There's Doolin's across the street. There's an Irishman was a security guard at a museum. And inside is this huge skeleton of a dinosaur. Now, most of you who are mothers of youngsters know that dinosaurs are the in thing now. And a visitor went up to the Irishman there, and he looked at this skeleton, and he said, gosh, that must go back ages. He said, how old is that thing? He said, 8 million years and 7 months. He said, how can it be so accurate down to the month? Well, he said, he was 8 million years ago when I came to work here, and that was 7 months ago. There's an American of Irish extraction. He had come over as a young man. And, of course, we have marvelous, wonderful medical centers here. And he learned of a youth pill. You know, one of them will set you back 25, 50 years, whatever. And he sent some home to his parents. So a couple of years later, he went back to Ireland. And he got off the airplane. And here is this absolutely gorgeous young creature, seemed like almost half his own age, waiting in the airport with a baby carriage and a little infant in it. And she walked up to him, called him by name. He said, yes, that's me. He said, who are you? She said, well, am I? I'm your mother. He said, my, you're kidding. No, she said, I took a youth pill that you sent over. And then he really got worried. He says, the baby, ma. Where'd the baby come from? Says, that's no baby, that's your father. He took two. This priest was walking by a pub one night after hours, and he looked in. There were three of his parishioners in there drinking. And he went in, he said, I'm kind of ashamed of you. He said, O'Rourke, do you want to go to heaven? Oh, yes, Father. He said, stand over there. Shaughnessy, how about you? You want to go to heaven? He said, of course, Father. He said, stand over there. Murphy, he said, do you want to go to heaven? No, Father. Murphy, do you mean to tell me when you die you don't want to go to heaven? Oh, he says, when I die, yes, I thought you was leaving now. I'm sure they do strange things in Tennessee, but this fellow was driving along the street and had a friend with him visiting from New York. And they come to the stoplight and the thing is red and the fellow drove right through it. And a New York friend didn't say a word. He thought, well, they went through another red light and he said, hey, pal, you just went through two red lights. He said, yeah, I know. That's the way my dad taught my brother and me how to drive. Come to a green light, and he screeches to a halt. He said, are you nuts? The light's green. He said, I know, but my brother may be out driving the other way. some of the funniest stories of all are about Britishers. One night, in an old English club after dinner, there were four very old British gents sipping their after-dinner brandies. And after about an hour and a quarter of complete silence, one of those old fellows figured it was about time that they introduced themselves to each other. And he said,
hey, Brigadier General, retired, married, two sons, and doctors.
And the other three went, oh, no. 38 minutes later, the second old man said,
Brigadier General, retired, married, two sons, and barristers.
Oh, is that?
19 minutes later, the third old man said, Brigadier General, I am retired and married, two sons, members of Parliament. And the fourth old man spoke up immediately.
Sergeant Major, retired, unmarried, two sons, Brigadier generals.
Fella borrowed the other fellow's car, and when he came back, he said, geez, thanks for using your car, but he said, I got a little water in the carburetor. Oh, I said, we can take care of that. Where is he? He said, in the river. Fella come back to one of his buddies from the hospital. He had just been examined, and he looked very sad. I said, what's wrong with you? He said, huh? Geez, the doctor told me I have this illness. And he said, I have to take a pill a day for the rest of my life. Well, he said, there's nothing wrong with that. He said, you can take a pill a day for the rest of your life. Why are you so sad? He said, he only gave me 4 of them. Pat was dying. Mike went to see him. He said, Michael, I'm not long for here. I says, I'll be gone. And within a couple of days, I'll be buried in the churchyard right across the road there. Now, I said, you and I have been friends all our lives. And he said, we used to be great drinking buddies, and every afternoon we'd drop into Flanagan's pub, and we'd have a couple of good bangs. Now, he said, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. He said, in memory of the good times, would you mind when you come home from work every day, he says, drop into the pub, have your drinks, and then get a good double shot of Irish whiskey and bring it over and pour it on me grave. And Mike is thinking, great Scott, what a waste of good booze. I hope to live to be 100. And he wants me to do this every day, a double shot of Irish whiskey. God help us, how can I do that? And yet this is a promise to a dying man. And then it hit him. Ah, Patrick, I'd be happy to do that. Every single afternoon of my life, in memory of the good times, I'll have me drinks and then I'll come over to the gravesite and I'll pour a double shot of good Irish whiskey over your grave. But would you mind, Pat, if I strained it through my kidneys? There's an old Irishman, he is a very wealthy fellow, gentleman farmer. And he had no one, absolutely no one. He never married. His own family was gone. And he decided to provide for his own death. So he went to the local undertaker, and he said, would you provide for me funeral? And they went through all the details and so on. He said, what'll it cost to have a first-rate funeral? He said, how much money do you have? He said, $50,000. He said, for $25,000, we'll give you the best. And then he went to Monsignor O'Brien, and he explained the same thing. He said, I'd like to have me funeral here. He said, what'll the offering be, Father? He says, how much money do you have? Well, he said, I had $50,000, but I give $25,000 to the undertaker to arrange that part of it. Well, he says, for the other $25,000, he said, we'll have the best mourners in the area, and I'll get the cardinal from Dublin to come over for it. Fine. And he paid the two of them, and he went his way. 13 years later, he was on his deathbed. And he requested O'Rourke and O'Brien, the undertaker and the pastor, to come down to see him. And he's lying on this bed with an immaculate white cover over him. And he said, I'm told by the doctor I have less than an hour to live. Now, he said, I've only one request. Would the two of you lie here beside me on your backs, one on either side? So they looked at each other, and request of a dying man, they did. So the three of them are lying there beside each other, staring at the ceiling. And after 20, not a word was being spoken. After 20 minutes, the old priest says, Shaughnessy, he says, we don't mind doing this, but he says, what in the name of God is this all about? Well, he says, Father, he says, in my life, I have not lived too much like our Lord and Master. But he said, I hope to die like him between you two thieves. This fella bought himself a motorcycle. He went out in the country, and it was the buzz of his little village. So he asked a cousin of his if he wanted a ride, and the guy climbed on behind him. And the wind, of course, like my jacket here, got in here and in here, and it ballooned out behind him and so on. And he says, stop the thing. He says, God, I think I'm going to be blown off of this. And his buddy says, well, put the jacket on backwards and I'll button it up the back. So they're riding along. All of a sudden they hit a bump and he loses his cousin. The fellow went sailing up in the air and plopped down. So he screeches to a halt and he rode back, and a couple of the villagers had gathered and they got this guy, and there he is, silent, just seated on a park bench. He says, how is he? How's my cousin? And the one old farmer says, well, I don't know. He said, he was talking and he seemed all right till we twisted his head on right. This fellow was in one of these hot air balloons, and he was lost, you know, and he had to come down somewhere, so he's releasing the hydrogen or whatever it is. Anyway, down he comes, and he's up in the air about 20 feet over the ground. There's this old farmer out there raking hay, and he calls him, and he says, hey there, he said, where am I? And the guy says, you can't fool me, you're in that little basket up there. This old Rube from the country went into Dublin and he got in a taxi cab and they got to talking, as the Irish do. They're talking with each other, and the cab driver, he says, well, now, do you like riddles? Oh, he says, I love them. He says, I got a good one for you. It isn't me sister and tisn't me brother, but it is the child of me father and mother. Who is it? The fellow says, I haven't a clue. And the cab driver says, it's me. It's not me sister or me brother, but it is the child of me father and mother. It's me. Oh, he said, that's lovely. And he went back home and he got a hold of one of his brothers. He says, say, he says, do you like riddles? Oh, he says, I love them. He said, I got a dandy for you. It isn't me sister and it isn't me brother, but it is the child of my father and mother. Who is it? Well, he says, it's you. God, no, it ain't me at all. It's a cab driver in Dublin. What? You know, drunks do and say the wackiest things you could ever imagine, as you know. This one fellow, every night of his life, he'd eat his dinner, then he'd get roaring drunk, he'd go to the closet, the old family closet, and pull out the old family cello, and this is the way he played it. He put one finger on one string and play one note. Ooh, by the hour. Drove his wife out of her mind. And after about 2 years of this, she screamed one night, knocked him right out of the chair. She says, will you stop that? And she says, you are driving me crazy. Besides, she said, any time I have ever seen anyone play a cello, the hand goes up and down the neck of that instrument. Every finger moves, every string gets touched. He says, I know. They've been looking for it, but I found it. You know, we were speaking last night, I think, about enabling. And the finest enabling story I think I ever heard, somebody once put it that even animals enable us. The last one usually to give up is the little old family pooch, and he sits there sad looking at us. Well, anyway, they tell the story of this old cow, old Bossy. She was the kindest, gentlest, sweetest old thing, gave milk by the gallon. And her master, the farmer, was an alcoholic. And one morning about 5:30, she's looking out the barn window and sees him coming out of the house, tiptoeing on eggs. He was hung over, he was in pain. And she's in such sympathy with him. Ah, she's thinking, the poor soul. He's so sick. So when he walked into the barn, she says to him, now I'll tell you what. Do you see the pail and the stool? Bring them over here. He did. She said, put the stool down and sit on it and stick the pail under me. He did. She turned around, looked at him. She said, now, when you're ready, you grab hold and I'll jump up and down. That is enabling. Well, you know what the sheriff said to his posse? Say, shoot low, boys, they're riding Shetlands, is what the sheriff said to his posse. Two ladies were standing over the coffin of one lady's husband. And the lady next door says to her, how did he die? Well, she said, he died in his sleep yesterday. She said, I went up at 7. I woke him up, told him to come down for breakfast. He didn't come down, and I went up a couple of hours later, and there he was, dead in bed. Now, she said if he'd gotten up when I told him to, he'd be alive today. This Irishman got himself a hearing aid, and his wife says, well, has it helped? He said, yes. Last week I heard from a brother in Australia I haven't heard from in 2 years. Speaking of hearing aids, there's an Irish lady in Boston. Her name was O'Keefe. She's leaving the hospital in April with her 14th baby. She's standing on the front stoop of the hospital with a little infant in her arms, waiting for her husband to come around with the car. And the mother superior of the nursing order there, she says, well, now, goodbye, Mrs. O'Keefe. She said, we'll be here next April when you come in to have your next baby. Ah, she says, Reverend Mother, I don't think I'll be doing that. Well, why? She said, you're married 15 years. Every year in April, you come in like clockwork. And you always have a good, lively, bouncy, very, very healthy baby. Why can't we expect the same thing next year? Well, she says, things will be different, Reverend Mother, now that I've got my hearing aid. She says, you're what? She says, my hearing aid. She says, what in the name of heavens does that have to do with it? She says, everything. She said, I didn't know it at all, but I'm hard of hearing. And she says, before I got the hearing aid, every single night of my life, we'd be getting ready to go to bed, and Pat would look at me and he'd say, now, Mary, do you want to go to sleep or what? And I'd always say, what? These two morons were building a rocket. Somebody said, what's that for? You going to the moon? No, he said, we're going to the sun. He said, you're nuts. You go to the sun, you'll burn up. He said, well, we know that. That's why we're going at night. Two fellows come back from fishing. They're in a rowboat, and one says to the other, he said, did you drop a marker at the place out there where we caught all the fish? No, he says, I did something better. He said, I put an X on the side of the boat. He said, you dummy, how can you be sure we'll get the same boat next time? Fellas in a burning house, and the firemen come. They're holding a blanket and say, jump, we'll catch you. He says, I know you fellas, you'll pull it away. No, 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 the house is burning, jump into the blanket. He said, I refuse, I know you and your practical jokes. They said, jump. He said, put the blanket on the ground, then I'll jump. I don't know whether I told you or not, but did I tell you this before? The Irishman went, he called Aer Lingus. He wanted to come to the United States, and he says, how long will it take one of them 747s to fly from Dublin to New York? And the girl said, just a minute. He said, my God, that's fantastic. I heard this story years ago in Dayton, Ohio. It's a good one. Fellow walked across the street from his house to a vet's office. He said, I have a very real problem. He said, I have an expensive exotic bird, and I know something's wrong with him. I think he's dying. And the fellow said, what kind of a bird is it? And when he told him, he said, oh, yeah. He said, that is an extremely rare and therefore very expensive bird. He said, what's wrong? I don't know. He said, he seems to be losing weight. He's very, very lethargic. He said, he's just, I don't know. He said, he's not singing, nothing. And the vet said, is there a big pile of seed under him? Yes. He said, I'll tell you why the bird is rare. He said, most of them die. The fellow said, why? He said, they have a problem with the upper part of the beak growing out over the lower part. And he said, your bird is dying. He's starving to death. He can't hold his seed. That's why I asked if it was down below. He said, he's dropping most of it. Oh. Well, he said, what do I do? He said, bring him in and I'll file it even. Well, he said, I am a master machinist. He said, during the war, I used to file machine gun barrels to within a tolerance of 1/10,000th of an inch. He said, filing is my life. He said, lend me your file, I'll do it. Well, he said, you have to be a little careful because if you file the least bit over, the lower part of the beak will grow out and he'll drown himself. He'll get water in his lungs by scooping up too much of it. Lend me the file, I know how to file. Well, they had an argument. And the fellow said, okay, I'll lend you the file. Well, he couldn't find one. By now, this guy is all heated up. He said, get down to the second vet, about two blocks down. He may have one. And he had to go through the same old hullabaloo over and again. He's really miffed. He can't find one. Went to the third vet. Sure enough, after the long argument over and over again, he lent him one of the files. 20 minutes later, he gets all the vets together. Well, my bird's dead. They said, we tried to tell you that. We tried to tell you that if you overfile. He said the filing had nothing to do with it. He was already dead when I took his head out of the vise. Little girl came home to her little village from the big city of Dublin. And she said, oh, Ma, she said, I've met the most wonderful fella. But she says, he's a Protestant. Will you pray for him? And the mother says, yes, indeed, honey. The next week she came, she said, Ma, your prayers are working. Went to church with me. Well, fine, she says, I'll get the nuns in on it, too. They'll pray with me. The following week she came, she says, he asked to see the priest. I think he's taking instructions. Well, it's good, she said, I'll get the monks from the monastery to join in. And she come back the next week and she says, oh, my Lord, Ma, she said, the prayers are being answered. He is. He's taking instructions to come into the church. She come busting back the next week. She says, stop the prayers, for heaven's sake. He wants to be a priest. This old lady went to confession. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 2 weeks since my last confession. And she says, I committed adultery. He says, how old are you? She says, I'm 80. When did this happen? She says, when I was 20. Oh, he says, have you been carrying that guilt around all these years? Oh, no, Father. She says, I confessed it immediately after it happened. He says, why are you confessing it now? She says, I'd just love to talk about it. These three Irishmen were going to be executed one at a time and by firing squad. So they lead Shaughnessy out. And when the leader of the squad said, ready, aim, he yelled, hurricane! God, they all scattered and he got out. The next one was O'Rourke. And they got him up against the wall and the firing squad's ready. And the leader said, ready, aim. He said, flood! They all ran. He got out. They got old Murphy up there. Ready, aim. He yelled, fire! I think it was that same hurricane. The wind was so fierce that a chicken in his backyard turned her back to the wind, laid the same egg 5 times. This is a good comment for us. In fact, I can imagine it's being said seriously rather than in jest. This old Irish woman says, God help us, I think the whole world is just full of drug addicts. And if it wasn't for me, Valium, I'd be one. You know, somebody once said, and I think it's true, God never sends us anything more than we can handle. Unless, of course, you die of something. You know. Are you bored? Slap a cop. Still bored? Tell your wife about your girlfriend. Fellow said, I'm not afraid to die, just don't want to be there when it happens. Hey, by the way, this is a lovely bit of philosophical lore which holds good. Only the mediocre are always at their best. It's a good line. It's a good line. This is a story that was told by a very, very good friend of mine. I've told it many times. Maybe you've heard it. There's a place in the Midwest, right outside a little country town, where there's a clover leaf that is banked in such a way that if you do not obey the speed limit coming off it, you'll shoot off. And one day, a truckload of gas, one of the major gasoline companies, was going a little bit too fast, shot off the road, and plowed right into a barn. There was an explosion. The barn was burning. So they could see it right from the little town, and about four engines came out. The heat was so intense, they couldn't get near enough to it to put it out. And they're standing there watching helpless when this little old volunteer fire department truck from the next town comes barreling in with the old chief drunk as a monkey driving that thing, clanging the bell, and just drove right through the crowd. They jumped to avoid being killed, and they went right up that barn, banged into the wall, and these fellas jumped out and beat the fire out. And the local TV commentator was there, and he's commenting on it as it happened. Meantime, one of the executives from the gasoline company comes out from the town. Soon it was all over. They wrote this fellow, the gasoline exec, wrote this old fire chief check for $1,000 for his volunteer fire department. So the local TV interviewer is telling this old man, he said, that's the greatest act of bravery, he said, we've ever seen around here. It's been magnificent. He said, by the way, what are you going to do with that $1,000? He said, the first thing I'm going to do is get the brakes fixed on that fire truck. The same fellow tells this story, and he tells it with a lovely, rolling North Carolina accent. Speaks of the alcoholic's ability to explain anything that happens. Logical explanation. And when he says it out loud, it makes sense to him. And he wonders why you're too stupid to understand it. This fellow owned a men's clothing store, and he was the alcoholic. He was hung over every morning and drunk by every afternoon. So this fellow walked in and he bought a shirt, extra large, with the word shrink resistant in the collar. So he took it home and he wore it, one wearing, and he put it in a wash, and when it came out, smaller than small. So he takes it back to the store, goes up to the manager, who is hung over something fierce, and he says, bought this shirt in your store yesterday. Says, I wore it last night. I put it in the laundry this morning. And they say, you can see what happens. He said, there's a mark, XL. But he said, look at this. Now I can't even get my arm through the body of this thing. Shrank resistant. What does that mean? The old alcoholic took the shirt. Well, he says, it did shrink. But it didn't want to. That is shrink resistant. I don't know whether I told you this before or not, but I've often said there are a lot of airplane pilots in the AA program, which is scary enough, but I think it would have been terrifying if you'd known about them before they got there. They tell the story of two fellas, a pilot and a co-pilot, who were hung over one day bringing an airplane into an airport, and as soon as it touched the ground, they reversed the engines and jammed on the brakes, and that old thing just shook. It shuddered to a halt, right at the edge of the runway, and the pilot was chalk white and sweating. He said, I've never seen a runway so short. The co-pilot says, you ought to see how wide it is. Now that pilot wasn't so smart. When he was a youngster in college, he called home one Friday. He says, Ma, I'll be home for the weekend. They lived a half hour from the school. He showed up on Sunday night. His mother was almost out of her mind with worry. She said, where have you been? Well, he said, Ma, I left school, got up the main highway. First thing I saw was this great big sign, clean restrooms ahead. He said, there were 18 of them. It took me 2 days. Do you like puns? I think a good pun is a joy forever. There's an old priest down in Mexico lost his bell ringer. The poor old sexton died, and the priest needed somebody to ring the church bell. And a fellow showed up one afternoon, absolutely no arms. He said, hey, Padre, he said, I'd like the job. He said, I'd like to be your bell ringer. And the priest looked at him. He said, how are you going to pull a rope to ring the bell? Well, he said, obviously, I have no arms. I can't. I ring the bell with my face. The priest said, you're kidding. No, he said, give me a chance. He said, let's go up the belfry and I'll show you. So he gets in a corner of the belfry, takes a run and leap, Bong! Priest said, go ahead, ring the bell for the next mass. Got in the corner, he was all excited about his new job, took a running leap, missed. Went flying out of the belfry, splatters all over the plaza. All the villagers gather around by the time the old man gets there. And they're all saying, who is he? Who is this man? The old priest leaned over and said, I don't know his name, but his face rings a bell. Don't moan, you'll be telling it in a minute. Now, wait a minute. There's a follow-up to this one. His identical twin brother. No arms. Asked the priest if he could ring the bell for his brother's funeral, and the priest said, certainly, go ahead. He was so grief-stricken and so nervous, he took a running leap. He missed. He had splattered on the same spot where his brother had landed the day before. And again, by the time the old priest got down, all the villagers are gathering around. Who's he? Priest said, I don't know his name either. But he's a dead ringer for his brother. Try this one. Little boy from the city goes out in the country. He'd never been out in the country before. He had eaten chicken, but he had never seen a live chicken. And his grandmother says, go out and, see all the animals, and I'll fix you your favorite dinner, when you come back. And he saw horses. Well, of course, he had seen horses. He saw the cows and so on. And he's out in the meadow, and here's a cow giving birth to a calf. And the kid was fascinated. And between contractions, the old calf would be halfway out lying there, the mother would be panting. So he went up and he grabbed the legs, put his foot against the mama, gave a couple of tugs, and he helped the little fellow out. And he watched him struggle to get up to his feet. So he helped him, and he straightened his four legs and patted him on the head. He said, now next time, watch where you're going. In the fellowships of AA and Al-Anon, the word fellowship is used often. Now, I'll give credit. There's a friend of mine down in South Carolina who told this story first, and he tells it annually at a gathering called Fellowship by the Sea. What is fellowship? He gives this definition of it. He said there was a young businessman who, after several years in the corporate rat race, decided to quit, go out in the country, and raise pigs. They had a little farm, and they did just that. He bought an old brood sow, and out they went. So he put her in the pigsty, and the first morning he woke up and looked out the window, and there were no pigs. Next day, no pigs. Next day, no pigs, no pigs, no pigs. So finally he got talking to a couple of farmers, and one of them said, well, she's not about to have pigs till she has fellowship with a boar. Oh. He found out there was a fellow down the road that owned a boar, so he called him up and made the proper arrangements. And the next day at 3 p.m, he loads the old sow into a wheelbarrow. Down the road they go, and while she's having fellowship, he's meeting and chatting with and having a cup of coffee with his neighbor. Back they come into the pigsty. Next morning he bounds out of bed, looks out, no pigs. So he loads her in the wheelbarrow up the road for a little more fellowship. Back they come the next day, no pigs, into the wheelbarrow, up the road, more fellowship. So this went on for about a month and a half. And one morning he woke up, couldn't get out of bed. He was so sick. He had such a fever. And he asked his wife to look out and see if there were any pigs. And she came back and said, no, no pigs yet, but that old sow's out there sitting in the wheelbarrow. I don't know whether any of you folks like to fish or not, but one of the funniest fishing stories I ever heard came from a Delta pilot. There are a group of fellows, about 6 or 7 of them, 3 or 4 farmers, one of whom was an alcoholic. Game warden, pharmacist, real estate agent, so on from this small town. They all used to fish together. And one afternoon, they're on the banks of the local river moaning about how poor the fishing is this year. And their alcoholic friend comes rowing upstream with a boat full of fish. They said, where'd you get him? He said, Jackson's Cove. They said, we have fished there. There's no fish there. He said, you obviously don't know all that much about fishing. And they were a little bit put out. They said, all right, wise guy, suppose you show us. He says, get in and I will. Around to Jackson's Cove, they row, and he dropped the anchor, and they're expecting to see some sophisticated new piece of equipment or some exotic new type of bait, no such thing. He lit a cigar. And when it got a nice, good, red-hot end on it, he reached on the rowing bench, took out a stick of dynamite, and he lit the fuse. And he let the fuse burn about halfway down, and he flipped it in the water. And when that thing blew up, about 30 dead fish came to the surface. He's scooping them in the boat, and they're killing him. Your grandchildren should hate your guts. Even a psychopath wouldn't do that. You are not a sportsman. And the game warden looked at him in utter disgust. He said, Charlie, you and I grew up together. We have fished together. But he said, you're going to go to jail for this, and I'll see to it. And he said, I'll see to it that you don't ever, or that you won't get, for at least 10 years, another fishing license. Charlie's not saying a word. He gets the last fish in the boat, reaches on the rowing bench, takes out another stick of dynamite, and he lit it. And he let the fuse burn about two-thirds of the way down. He handed the dynamite to the game warden. He said, you going to fish or talk? Five men in a light aircraft. President Carter, former President Ford, Henry Kissinger, an old priest and a young hippie. They're in the air about an hour when the pilot walks into the cabin. He's got a parachute strapped to him. And he's talking very rapidly. He said, gentlemen, we have two problems, and they're both bad. He said, number one, serious engine trouble that I can't correct. The plane is going down. Now, he said, the second thing is, there are five of you and four parachutes. And he jumped. So they all deferred to the president, and Carter said, look, I'm no better or worse than any man alive, but I happen to be president. The country needs me. He took a chute and jumped. Ford said, I'm no better or worse than any man either, but I used to be president. My experience can help him. The country needs me, and he jumped. Kissinger spoke up. He said, I am the most brilliant, most intelligent man on earth. The whole world needs me. He jumped. Priest looked at the kid. He said, son, I am not a hero. I do not look forward to death. But I'm willing to die. My life is over. Yours is just beginning. Take the chute, jump, I'll go down with the plane. The hippie says, hey, Padre, they ain't no need to do that. The most brilliant man on earth just jumped out of this airplane with my backpack on. One of my favorite stories goes back 42 years. I heard it in a seminary from one of my professors. There's an old Irish priest who had harbored a passionate hatred of the British people. And some absolutely brilliant superior assigned him to a parish in downtown London, England. Well, that old boy just couldn't resist. He got up in the pulpit the first Sunday, 900 people there, and he lit out on a tirade that shocked them, hurt them, scandalized them. Immediately after Mass, they called the bishop, and he had that man down before the evening meal and scolded him. He said, the pulpit is no place for your personal prejudice. I promise you, my grace, I promise, I'll do better. The next Sunday, only half the people showed up. They were so bitter about him, and he killed him again. And again, he got reprimanded. And the following Sunday, only three people there. And boy, when the bishop got wind of that down, he hauled him. He said, Padre, you open your mouth once more against your people. And he said, I'll suspend you. Well, that's a horrible sanction. It means you can't function as a priest. And the old man started to sob. He says, your grace, I promise, with all my heart and soul. The next thing in church was Ash Wednesday, and all the parishioners sewed up because in spite of him, they wanted to make a good Lent. That old man got in the pulpit on Ash Wednesday night and gave one of the most brilliant, one of the most deeply spiritual talks they had ever heard in their lives. They couldn't believe it was the same man. So when they went home, they spread the word, and the following Sunday, the church was overflowing, and he was better. He was better. And as Lent went on, this man's reputation spread throughout all the neighboring cities. By Holy Week, there were 60,000 people crowding the center of London. They had speakers all over the center of the city, so that this man could be heard. Well, he held out till Holy Thursday night. 60,000. He just couldn't resist. He got up to the pulpit. He says, well, now, my dear brethren, he says, tonight's Holy Thursday. He said, it's the night of the commemoration of the Last Supper. He said, you know, after the the dear Lord ate the Passover meal with his men, he looked at him and he said, "Now, lads, one of you is about to betray me." And Peter says, "Is it I, Lord?" "No, Pete, you're the rock. I'm going to build the church on you." And John says, "Is it I?" "No, John, I love you more than all the others." And James says, "Is it I, Lord?" "No, Jimmy," he said, "you're a lovely broth of a lad." And it got down to that Judas. Judas stood up and he said, he looked our divine Lord right in the eye and he said, "Ew, me, governor?" Of course, yeah, I know you're all familiar with the story of the dear old white-haired lady walked in a bar with her pet goose under her arm. And this old drunk said, "What are you doing in here with that pig?" She said, "That's a goose, young man." He said, "I was talking to the goose." The same guy a little later went in the men's room. When he came out, somebody had swiped his drink. He said, "Hey, bartender, did you see my drink?" And the bartender says, "I see thousands of drinks. What do you mean that I see your drink? What was it?" Well, he said, "I don't know, but it was tall and cold and full of gin." Some other drunk at the other end of the bar said, "Sir, you are speaking of the woman I love." There was an Irishman who never paid a dime for a drink because he used to look up what we call the Irish sports page every day. You know, the obituary column. And he'd look up the Irish names and he'd go to the wakes. And this one was he'd pretend that he knew the corpse, you see. And so this one was Danny Murphy had died. And the body was laid out from Friday night. He wasn't to be buried till Monday. Well, he went there Friday night. And, of course, he endeared himself to the family. "Ah, yes," he read something about this lad. He says, "We came over from the old country together." And he said, "We worked on the street corners," he says, of New York here all together. And he said, "He was my dearest friend." And he said, "God, what a loss." And he got drunk. Saturday night and Sunday night he got drunk. Well, by Sunday night he was almost part of the family. And he's standing there with his arm around the widow's shoulder looking at Danny Murphy's body. And the widow says, she says, "Pat, I don't know what I'm going to do." She says, "I've lived with him for 35 years. He is my husband." She says, "I'm lost without him. What am I going to do?" And he's standing there swaying so drunk. He says, "Well, I'll tell you what we could do. We could stuff him and keep the party going." Drunk walking down the street, two nuns walking towards him. He didn't know what to do, and he stopped, and the two nuns separated and walked around him. He blinked and said, "How in the hell should you do that?" You've seen Chalk Talk, haven't you? It was in there. Anyway, this Irish undertaker was leaving Mass after a funeral. And he had the corpse in front of him and the pallbearers here. And the church was on a hill with a very steep set of stairs going down. It's mid-January. Everything's frozen. And somebody lost his grip and the old coffin went boom-diddy-boom-diddy-boom-diddy-boom down with the undertaker just running as fast as he could after the corpse. And it went across the street and in the local drugstore with him behind it screaming, "Hey, Doc, do you have anything to help me stop this coffin?" See, I love puns. I really do. But because you don't, never mind. I've come to the end, actually, and I'm glad I remembered it with all these reminders up here because many, many people, I think I hear that a lot of alcoholics suffer Irish Alzheimer's disease, which means that you forget everything except your resentments. You just... And most people are quite good at hanging on to them. But anyway, I have always felt, and very strongly, that since there are no smiles in alcoholics' homes, and the laugh of the practicing alcoholic is rather hollow, that one of the gigantic blessings of the sober life is the belly laugh. And most good, solidly recovered alcoholics love to laugh. They love to laugh at themselves. This is the only illness whose subject matter provides food for jokes. I said at the end of the old chalk talk, if ever you find a man who has no smile on his face, give him one of yours. Because a smile is one of the most precious things in all of creation. It brings happiness to the sad. It brings joy to children. Make a child laugh, and you'll know what I mean. And I have always felt, at this age in my life, long after I have departed this veil of tears, I sincerely hope that if any of you ever has a thought about me, I hope it brings a smile to your face. Be true to your teeth, and they'll never be false to you. Oh, I said, thank you.